And back with the latest installment of Tony Talk right here on Scoops with DannyMac.com. Our visits each week with the Hall of Fame manager presented by Marie Davila Senior Living, Triad Bank, Greenville University, Victory Men's Health, and Be the Match. And a special thank you to everybody who turned out at the Cardinal game. Join for Joe, all those folks who entered and got onto the registry. Be the Match. Very appreciative of the Cardinals as well as your efforts. Let's begin with Tony's visit to upstate New York, specifically Cooperstown. And I'm just wondering, when you go there, and you've been there many times, are you ever not in awe that you're in that select company?
Well, a couple of things. One, every time you go back, it gets better. You know, it's like, and it never gets old, it gets better, because you have more of an idea of what's in store for you, and you can really enjoy all the very, and there are many, many special features. The second one is, no, the awe factor is as strong as ever. I've said it, you know, so many times. I think if some people believe me, I hope you do, but some people do not. You know, I always felt the Hall of Fame was a player's, you know, award and a special fraternity. And then when I looked at some managers, you know, like Sparky and Tommy, you know, they were really baseball ambassadors. But, you know, I'm more of a kind of a relentless grinder, so I never felt like it, if even if I'm there because of great fortune of where I was a manager. But I, you know, you don't ever equate yourself with the players.
Would you tell can you paint a picture for Cardinal fans, baseball fans who've never been? And I've said to folks, maybe go in an off time, go in October. I mean, it's a beautiful town, first of all, but paint a picture for folks who've never been there to the hallowed hall.
Well, I call it a village. Cooperstown's more like a village. You know, it's very homey and quaint and unique. And the hall itself, they have really gone through a lot of efforts to bring out the game at its best. There are so many great exhibits. They keep them fresh. And then, you know, they have a policy where it's possible to go down into the cellar. I don't know if it's a cellar downstairs, where they save a lot of the stuff. And you see the orientation for the new Hall of Famers. They always take them down there, and they, you know, they hold Babe Ruth's bat or Ted Williams' bat, stuff like that. So, but it's the, between the exhibits and all the extra things that you see there, it's definitely worth, if you're just a casual baseball fan, you walk out of there, you'll be more. If you never were a baseball fan, you'll be a fan once you leave it.
And we'll dig into some of the baseball headlines, but maybe a friend of Tony thought would be in Cooperstown. Give me an idea of some of the dinners or the folks that you were hanging out with.
Well, you know, the big one starts Friday when you show up that night. Jane Forbes Clark, she has a special party where all the guys are there with their families and some guests, and you know, you have a lot of neat conversations. One of the neatest for me was that Roland Heeman, who my first general manager, first guy that Dave Dombrowski worked with, and Harold Baines, he was there. You know, he's almost 90 now, and that was a treat. But then on Saturday, you have the afternoon where they induct, you know, the writer and the broadcaster, and then they had a special thing on coaches, what I really like, because Dave Duncan was one of the featured ones. That night, there's a bunch of parties for the coming inductees. So there were six different parties. Then we all have a special dinner with Jerry Reinsdorf and Eckersley, and we use the, you know, this time, you know, Bob Casas was there last year, Artie Moreno, you know, different guys you invite. But getting to the point, Sunday, the induction, that's the one, you know, to me, that the number one thrill for me is just the introductions, because you sit there or you stand there, wherever you are, and you listen to the records of these guys. I mean, it's just ridiculous how great these guys were. And this time I sat next to Gossage and Trammell in between them, and that was a treat. Then finally, and this was probably one of the real highlights of the weekend, once it's over, there's a very private dinner for Hall of Famers only, the new inductees, the commissioners there, and the president of the Hall of Fame, where each player gets his ring and you know, a smaller version of the plaque. And it's just kind of uproarious, because the guys will get on you about any little thing that you can get on. I remember Seaver used to yell at me. I was a coattail Hall of Famer, for example. So, you know, the table that I sat at, you know, had Hank Aaron, and that was enough for me right there to look across the table and see Hank. I mean, this is such one of the most beautiful men I've ever been around. Or he is just amazing to have him go through what he has to get there. And Commissioner Seelig was there, and Pat Gillick, you know, Gaylord Perry. And then the last one, I'll tell you very quickly, coming away, we'll spend the whole time on this, but late at night, I got a call once it was over, to Joe Torre wanted, he and I recorded a video for Bobby Cox, who's, you know, recovering. And when you go down there late, there was a special gathering of Sandy Koufax, another guy. When he's there, it's a made event. Alan Trammell, Craig Biegel, Trevor Hoffman, Torre. And the discussion there for about 45 minutes was incredible. So, I mean, it's I get goose pimples talking about it, much less experiencing it.
Yeah, it's amazing. If somebody just had one encounter where they're sitting in a room with Sandy Koufax, that would be enough. And then there's a different moment where you're staring at Hank Aaron, you're sitting next to Gossage. Very cool. Coattail Hall of Fame. I guess Seaver can get away with that. I will never say that, just for the record.
Well, I agree. I think he's very smart.
Baseball headlines, and the Cardinals win a game big in Pittsburgh, and at one point it's 11-4 in the fourth inning. Jairo Munoz steals second, later steals third. The announcers for the Pirates grumble a little bit. I don't know that I heard the Pirates complain. You see some things online, unwritten rules. My argument would be it's a 7-run lead, but it's the fourth inning. Are the unwritten rules still in play, and would they have applied in that situation?
Well, the unwritten rules are still around. It would not have applied because normally once you get into the last third of the game, you're talking about the seventh, maybe the sixth, if you're really beating the club up and, you know, there's no hope, then you might start shutting it down a little bit. But, you know, with that many outs to get, I mean, you know, those innings get away from you. And here's the point. Nowadays, if you get something going and a pitching staff is vulnerable, you know, you can drop a big crooked number in a minute. You drop a couple of those and you lose one of those games because you shut it down. And you'll never forgive yourself. So, no, I think there's no unwritten rule to stop running then. I mean, typically, Wrigley Field with the wind blowing out, you know, Coors Field, even then in the seventh inning, you may be up by five or six, and you're still pushing because nothing is safe. But I do believe that late in the game, you know, if you've got anything like a 5-run lead with 8 outs to get or 9 outs to get, if your bullpen's not good enough to stop them, then you're not good enough.
Yeah, I think it's too early for that to be in play because I think the 11 runs stood out, but it was only a 7-run lead, only in the top of the fourth. There's still a long way to go. Also, really interesting.
Wait a minute, one other point, Martin, real quick. Sparky Anderson always told me, you know, you run your own game. If somebody runs on you, you don't necessarily say, hey, you know, you're not judge and jury, but you just make a note. And if you ever have a chance and you do the same to him, just because you wouldn't do it doesn't mean that somebody else does it. You know, I'm not going to hurt somebody. But you do make a note and you pay them back by doing the very same thing.
It is worth noting in that game, the Pirates scored 4 more runs from that point forward. So that game, had the Cardinals not added on, it would have gotten real, real tight, real late. Really interesting with the Red Sox, your team, and Alex Cora and a lineup. I don't even know what to call it. A mess, I believe, is what Cora called it. But let's walk through this a little bit. So Tampa Bay takes the pitcher out, but they don't take him out of the game. They put him at first base so that they can bring him back into the game to pitch. And Cora points out, in terms of the lineup having a DH, what is the rule there? It was a long delay for the game between the Rays and Sox. Explain it to folks.
Well, it's very clear. And, in fact, I think my understanding is a young manager, Kevin Cash, who's really an outstanding manager, did an outstanding thing. I think he called Alex afterwards, say he messed up. What you do is, as soon as you put the pitcher into the game at any position, you lose the DH. So DH is not available, and the pitcher replaces the spot in the lineup where the DH was. That's just the rule. And what they did there with that first one is they felt that the DH was still alive. The guy just replaced the first baseman, but they still had a DH. So when they came back in the next time and then brought him back in there and tried to put the manipulate the lineup, then that was, you know, there was a couple of mistakes there. And, you know, it so rarely happens that I can understand why, you know, Kevin, you know, it's more a, you know, that's one of those double switches you get used to in the National League, but it's different with the DH. And it was a mistake. Our guys call it. They protested. Here's, I think, the interesting point for the fans. I think we have a legitimate protest. It was a mistake made. In the end, the protest will be allowed if the Major League Baseball feels like it impacts the playing of the game, and that's really the determination they have to make now.
So when it goes to any position, then the DH is automatic for the rest of the game. Then the DH, once you have a pitcher playing a position, you lose the right to have a DH.
Once a game pitcher is switched from mound to position on defense, it terminates the DH role for that club for the remainder of the game.
Interesting. This weekend, it's a reunion weekend for the Cardinals, the 2004 team celebrating their 15th anniversary. And what a team it was. We've talked over the years about it, 105 wins. I also think about the personalities and just the star power. The great phrase was MV3s with Pujols, Roland, and Edmonds. And I've also thought about a team that has so many stars. How do you handle that? Because each, boy, Edmonds, Pujols, Roland, three very different, very unique people. And I'm sure when you manage a star, it's one thing. But what's it like juggling three stars?
I just, you know, remember we also had Edgar Renteria, Reggie Sanders. I mean,
loaded, yeah.
And the pitchers, you know. But I think the points to make there are that this is what I was taught. There are certain priority rules that represent how your club conducts itself, how it competes, you know, how it practices, so forth, and how it should deal with the public and the fans. And those things are applied to everybody, no matter who you are. You know, so, you know, if you love to talk to the press, you talk to the press. Somebody that doesn't love to talk to the press, he doesn't have a choice. You know, you have a responsibility to talk. But the other thing then is, other than the hard and fast rules that everybody, you know, everybody must come to the park ready to compete and play hard, run the ball out, you know, just play as hard as you can as a team player. That doesn't change. But then you look at the individuals, and, you know, Jimmy Edmonds, you know, one of my all-time favorites. You know, Jimmy had 100 things going through his mind at one time, you know, so he could be easily distracted at times, and sometimes you just bring him back. You know, you don't want him falling in a ditch. You just try to keep him on the road. Scott Rowland, you know, is a true pro. I mean, you know, strong, silent type in a way, but, you know, when he spoke, it's like E.F. Hutton. Everybody's going to listen. Albert was similar in the sense that, you know, he made a big splash as a rookie of the year, and by the time he got to 2004, he's always an established player. And Albert had this tremendous sense of responsibility, very serious, that, you know, he had to justify the, you know, the gifts that were given to him. He's very, you know, he's very faith-oriented and filled a commitment. So he was more quiet in his preparation. So they were all different, but they were all great players, and you let them show their differences, and as long as they did the mandatory stuff.
You've had some huge moments you're a part of. Boy, the Edmonds home run, Game 6, the old Bush, that's got to rank real high. And then just kind of the back-to-back, 6 and 7, because you guys beat Clemens in Game 7, rolling homers there. But all of that is on the heels of what happened in Game 5. You lose on a Kent walk-off in Houston. How tough is that flight home? You're down 3-2. You know you got two at home potentially, but I don't think we talk enough about how that team, you could have been mentally buried coming home from Houston.
Well, that was you're right. That, you know, it got overshadowed, as most fans know, because the Yankees and the Red Sox, you know, Red Sox came back from 3-0 to beat them. But we were having our own great, great series. We won two at home. They beat us three very, very difficult games. But Houston was a very good team. I mean, they had, you know, Clemens, and they had, they had Oswald. They were really good. So the one thing that I appreciated about our team was, you know, how tough we were. You know, we showed that year in, year out. We were never going to give in, never going to give up. Just like in 05 when Albert hits a home run. It didn't look like it was going to work for us, and we lived to play another game. But that team, even though we had lost, we had played very hard. The other team played better. You tip your cap, and you come home, and then you need the heroics of Jim Edmonds with the home run. And then you need the heroics of Jim Edmonds with the catch in Game 7. But I will tell you something that, if you remember, between 96, 2000, 2002, we kept losing in the championship series. So when we won Game 7 and had beaten the great Roger Clemens, at that time, that was one of the happiest days I've ever been in uniform, because we had finally at least won the championship, and now we could play in the World Series. So that team was very special, and then we ran to this buzzsaw, and, you know, the only, I would never disrespect, I mean, it's not that Boston couldn't have beat us, but we should have won a couple of games, because that lineup we had was just incredible. We didn't have Karp. Karp had gotten hurt in September, and by then, you know, Matt and Woody, you know, they were running on fumes as far as, you know, they didn't have quite their stuff. So I think that explains to me why we didn't win a game or two. I certainly am not saying that we would have beaten Boston.
I know some towns will say, well, you only celebrate a championship. The Cardinals over the years have celebrated pennant winners, and I think that 04 team is a really, you know, it's funny. Rich Gould, sportscaster in town for a long time, we were saying the other day how it was like our favorite team, and, you know, it didn't win the World Series, but are you good with celebrating a team that doesn't win at all?
Oh, man, that's just, it makes so much sense. For one thing, you get a championship ring. If you win your league championship, you get a championship ring. So even though we've lost three World Series, you know, I have three really nice rings that represent something very special, which is that we won the league. So yeah, that's, I mean, not just winning the championship. You know, nowadays, you know, you win and you have to go to the division series, and you got to win, you know, best of five, and then you got to win a best of seven. So you definitely have earned and deserved. And you know, the fans will make their own mind up. You know, I don't know where they put them with the 06 and 11 teams, but I got to believe that the fans are really going to be very pleased to see those guys back together.
And your great phrase that we've learned on this show, you've got the locker, I've got the office, you were in charge as the manager. What about when you get with these guys now years later? Because you certainly, you were the manager, you were, quote-unquote, their boss. Now the tables, are they picking on you now when you get around these guys years later?
Well, they're relentless. I mean, they're relentless. I mean, most of the time I keep reminding, they keep telling me that actually what I did was I told them what time the game started and who we were playing, and then I talked to the press. That was kind of my job. But, the, you know, the other thing about it that I'm really pleased about, you know, is that it's going to, the 04 team, the greatness of the players, but we had a staff. You know, Barry Weinberg is going to be there representing our coaching staff. I mean, our training staff. Joe Pettini and Jose Oquendo are going to be there representing the great coaching staff that we have. We don't have Dave Duncan or Dave McKay coming. And then Walt Jocke is going to be there representing the great front office. So I think not just the players, but I think our fans understand that, you know, over the years, it's really been an organizational effort, starting with player development. We could have, you know, our player development director out there because a lot of those guys came through the system.
And that year, I believe it was a 13-game division win. You ran away with things. This year, the NL Central looks like it's going down to the wire, real tight race. As a manager, when do you, quote-unquote, crack the whip and say, all right, now we're really – because it's a long season, it's a grind, you don't want to wear these guys out. But the Cardinals now, 2 years in a row, have had a good post-All-Star push. Hopefully it continues here. But when do you kind of give them the sense, all right, it's almost crunch time here, or the playoff push is on now? When do you push that button?
I think I can give you a very realistic answer because it's one that I've been taught and been used. You don't want your players to think that you need to get to the second half of the season before you step on the gas. You know, you don't get to September with a chance to win because you've been messing around the first half of the season. So the first reality is that the early part of the season, every time you win games there, that's less that you got to do later. So we would always try to have the same intensity about competing. You want to get in the habit of going out there and feeling the pressure of executing and trying to beat the other side. The difference is in the first, I would say the first, up until the trade deadline, you know, until about the first 4 months, a lot of the times you're taking the long view. If a pitcher or a hitter struggles, you know, you want to get, and you believe in them, you give them time to get ready, you know, to get right. If you may have a time where you may be playing the rubber game of the series and you have a key guy who's a little sore, you just rest him because it's not worth blowing him out or keeping him in a position where he's in a negative situation for the next series. So you really are pacing to a certain extent the amount of moves that you make in lineups. But what you got to remember, as long as the guys that are in the lineup feel the pressure to play as hard as they can that day, you will win some games and you're still generating that positive, every game means something. But then the best part is, by the time you get to August, September, if you're in contention, we all feel it's the best time of the year because the end is in sight. You've gone through 4 months. You actually see a number of series. You got maybe three or four home series, three or four road series. And at that point, you already know who's having great years, and you give them more at-bats. You give them more innings to pitch. And you don't try to manipulate the lineup as much. You send the horses to the post more often because the end is in sight. And you really can't afford to make up ground.
Tony Talk continues right after this. Be the Match, a great organization, now a proud sponsor of Tony Talk, our weekly visits here with the Cardinals Hall of Fame manager. Be the Match has gotten a lot of attention of late because Layla, the Blues superfan, has gotten a lot of attention. And her story, you know what it is, needed a bone marrow transplant. Here's what takes place. Every 3 minutes in the United States, someone is diagnosed with a blood cancer. They turn to the family first, but 70% of the time, the family isn't a match. In the case of Layla Anderson, the super fan for the Blues, she needed a bone marrow transplant. They went to the registry. That's what Be the Match is all about. They have the donor registry. She got the call. Her family found out she had a match. She had a donor. It saves lives. Be the Match is really a community. It's donors, it's volunteers, it's healthcare professionals, it's researchers. You can get involved. BeTheMatch.org/give. You can make a donation so they can continue the great research they're doing, helping save lives. That's what Be the Match is all about. We appreciate them being a sponsor on Tony Talk. Since 1960, serving the families of St. Louis, Marie Davila Senior Living. At the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, the beautiful fountain greets you for the 22-acre campus. Full range of senior living, independent living at the Villa Estate, skilled nursing, memory care, they have it all. Spacious dining room, salon, transportation around town, exercise and pool, private rooms, hands-on care. You're not a resident at Marie Davila, you are considered a guest. Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan and their sons live on site. It is family run, and it has that family feel. You've heard Tony and I talk about how this was home for the legendary Red Shandings for many years. He was also on the board and helped the original owners start Marie Davila back in 1960. MarieDavila.com. We suggest you go online and schedule a tour.
It's Tony La Russa for my friends at Victory Men's Health, where they can help you be you again. If you're dealing with low T, ED, or vitamin deficiencies, make sure to see my friends at Victory Men's Health. They now have two locations, O'Fallon, Illinois, and the new addition in Town and Country. Both offices feel more like a man cave than a clinic. So get yourself back in the game by setting up an appointment at victorymenshealth.com.
One of our great sponsors on Tony Talk, Triad Bank, the neighborhood-friendly bank located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. They're just west of Lindbergh. Real easy access off Highway 64, get to Lindbergh, and you are there. Founded in 2005, wide range of commercial and personal banking services. And how about this? They actually have people behind the counter, people there ready to greet you, ready to help you. Business owners looking to expand, talk to the bank based in St. Louis. Those decisions are being made here. How frustrating is that? You're trying to get a loan for your business, and the decision is made in New York or Los Angeles, not with Triad Bank. You can find out more at triadbanking.com. Home equity lines of credit, five-star rated bank, $360 million in assets. Check them out, triadbanking.com. Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University. Founded in 1892, this liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community. A great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution.
You can always communicate with the show, TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. And this week, I'm going to turn the floor over to listener Erin. Loves listening to the show, and she sent in a couple of items for us. One of them, she wanted your take on the minimum three-batter rule, which I believe is instituted next year, the reliever rule. They're trying to mix things up. I think we've touched on it, but she wanted to know your take on this rule's implementation.
Well, I understand. I think it's still under discussion. And I was one of the ones surprised everybody that felt that there should be a rule where the reliever has to face more than one hitter. I think it's just gotten so much scripted that you guys just walk back and forth making changes. There's not as much rhyme or reason. It just is the matchups, and you're kind of automatically doing things. But what happens is every time you make a pitching change, either in the second half of the game or the last third of the game, it's a very dramatic time. And what happens? The momentum of the action actually stops while the guy comes in, warms up. So I believe that they should face more than one. For a long time, I thought three was right. Now I'm definitely, you know, whenever I've tried to stump a crusade, I say it should be only two. Because if you have a close game and the guy really struggles and he faces two guys and has to face a third one, you may blow the game, and I think that's unfair. So I'm all for more than one reliever, but I mean more than one hitter. I think it should be two, not three. But I'm going to tell you, I have some great friends in the front office and in uniform guys that totally disagree and think that that's not a good rule.
And you, in terms of bullpen, you get credit a lot for being real active with bullpens. I mean, you probably did a lot of guys just face one batter, but do you, as you were kind of touching on here, it's almost not cliche, but people are just kind of doing it to do it. Whereas, because, I mean, you did a lot of maneuvering too with the bullpen, right? What's changed, do you think?
Well, I think the, you know, I've been challenged, but because of what I just said, because I did use it. Well, you know, I acted within the rules, and I was always taught, you know, you got to try match up late. But you also understand every time you make a pitching change, your defense sits out there, and the game slows down. So, you know, I would try to match up, but I wouldn't, you know, I didn't go. We went by what we were figuring that day, and the left hander to face one guy one day could face two guys the next day. It might be a right hander just because it made sense to us. So, you know, the evolution of the bullpen from when I first played to when I first managed, it's become to where you construct your team as much with a great bullpen as a great starting rotation. And I just think at this point, because there's a little too much of averages, you know, and percentages, and you make moves that you have scripted before the game starts, and I don't think that's smart when you're actually watching the dynamics of a real game.
All right, Erin also said she enjoys Redbird Roulette, hearing about former players. She said, I would love to get Tony's take on Joe McEwing. Little Mac, when we had Big Mac doing all his heroics, there was Little Mac, Joe McEwing. I think even for a period they started Little Mac Land, kind of had fun with that, and Joe McEwing. He's always mentioned for managerial jobs. But when he came along, what was your blink on Joe McEwing?
Well, I'm glad. I applaud her for asking about Joe. You know, Joe is now a coach with the White Sox, has been for several years, has done a great job. He's coaching third now. I think he's a bench coach. Joe, one of my favorite and all of our coaches' favorite parts or characters of Joe was that he was a real student of the George Kissel School. And he was so fundamentally sound. You wanted to drop a bunt, he was in a perfect bunt situation. I mean, he knew how to do it. You wanted to play the game, whatever it was, he knew what the situation was, and he had all the basics because he had been taught them. So here's a guy that, you know, I mean, his skills, you know, he wasn't the fastest runner, didn't throw the ball as far, couldn't hit it as far, but he was so fundamentally sound that he became a very, very productive clutch player. And there was a year where he hit 300 in the big leagues, and he's famous. In fact, Randy Johnson, when I was with Arizona, remember Joe McEwing because Joe got base hits off of Randy Johnson. That's not possible. Nobody hits off of Randy, but Joe did. And one last PS, you know, I always had what I called my own personal Hall of Fame, guys that were really special. I would ask something that I would keep. When we traded Joe, he gave me a pair of spikes, and that I had, you know, a real true winner or something like that, a student of George. So I'm glad she asked about George, what do we call him? The
Super Joe. I think he was called
Little Mac. Super Joe. That was it.
Super Joe.
He was super.
Yeah,
super.
I had to look it up. I had forgotten. He had a 25-game hitting streak, which is still one of the longest for a rookie. 25-game hitting streak. Super Joe. Fans fell in love with him. Great recall. Thanks to Erin for those questions. Redbird Roulette each week. Part of the program, which is presented by Marie Davila Senior Living, Triad Bank, Greenville University, Victory Men's Health, and Be the Match. Tony, great conversation. Look forward to seeing you in St. Louis this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Thanks a lot.